Hi, I'm Mark Waite, editor-in-chief of Boom Studios, and I'm here today with... Thank you. Thank you for doing the...
15 minutes with Mark Waite.
Impromptu post. I am here...
Isn't that the theme song?
That's pretty much it. And I'm here with...
My name is Stephen Wacker. I'm the editor of Amazing Spider-Man and Daredevil at Marvel Comics.
And we're just here today talking... I'm in New York, actually. We're here for a Spider-Man conference, and we're taking a few minutes out to talk about Spider-Man in general. And you've been editing Spider-Man for now how long?
I've been editing Amazing Spider-Man since January of 2008.
Right.
I was on a book called Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man for a few months before that. But really editing Amazing for almost 2 years now.
And that's like, this is more than a full-time job, because this is your three times a month Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that alone would be a full-time job. So.
Yeah, I don't know that they could have done this before cell phones and...
That's true. Yeah, exactly.
And a computer, because it's a lot of communication with a lot of different writers and artists. And it has become, I sleep with my phone by my bed waiting for the bat phone to ring in the middle of the night, and somebody in Brazil doesn't know what to draw.
I get my emails at 1 o'clock in the morning from you. It's kind of amazing. So you, when did you first discover Spider-Man? Like, what would...
As a kid, it was a random pick. Boy. Oh, no, you know what it was? Yeah. It was the not digest, but... You can't see the hand gestures I'm making.
The little books, the pocketbooks.
Yeah, the pocketbooks. Yeah, okay. They reprinted the Lee Ditko stuff at a very small size.
Yeah.
Perfect for small eyes and small hands. Fit perfectly in my hand. It looked like an omnibus.
Yeah. I know.
And they methodically... I actually had the Fantastic Four one, but my friend Daryl had the Spider-Man one.
Yeah.
And somehow got Volume 2 and 3, so you had a good chunk...
Like the first 20 issues. That's the first 20, yeah.
And... those things were very dialogue heavy, so printed at a very small size, it looks like a novel with a shot of Spider-Man in the middle.
That's true, yeah.
But it just, I was young enough. It's like the right age to listen to rock and roll. It just got me. And from there, I started picking up the books off the stands. The first one I remember buying was 198, I think, with Mysterio. Was it Mysterio or Kingpin?
I think that was Mysterio, I think.
But I never got the conclusion.
Ah.
No. Well, I have now. I'm
okay.
Big-time comic editor. cut that
out. Cut that out.
And the one that really stuck with me was a couple years later, there was a Frank Miller cover of Spidey in Jail.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is my favorite Spider-Man cover ever. And the story's crazy. Like, he's got a... break into the jail to do an expose as Peter Parker, and he goes into... I mean, they just wanted Peter in the prison yard.
Yeah, exactly. All I remember with that comic is that the same week that shipped, there was a Captain America comic with the same exact cover.
No kidding.
With Captain America behind bars. It's the same exact cover.
By Frank? Or was it Byrne?
I don't remember. It was after Byrne.
Frank Springer?
Like Ed Hannigan. I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah. I remember nothing else about the story. But that spoke to you.
Yeah.
All right.
And the TV show I was never really into, but I was the right age for it to be on, the Nicholas Hammond.
Nicholas Hammond.
Yeah, not the cartoon. I wish I could say it was the cartoon.
Oh, Nicholas Hammond. Where are you now?
And I don't remember how long that show was just on for a cup of coffee.
It really wasn't on for much at all. I mean, it ran regularly for a very brief period of time, but then it very quickly started being broken up into like two episode movie of the night sort of thing.
Right.
They would run two episodes at a time or something. It was, I remember it leapt around the schedule a lot. And all I remember is, that's not what Joe Jameson looks like. It's not what J. Jonah Jameson looks like.
Yeah.
He doesn't wear his spider web shooters on the outside of his web shooters.
There's pictures of the show in the Marvel offices. There's a poster on the upper floors, a promo of one of the movies.
Yeah. Did you ever see the rest of the movies of that era, of that, the Doc Strange and Captain America and
no.
all that stuff?
No. But Doc Strange have, like, Rick Springfield in it?
No. It's got, again, Peter Horton, something like that. Horton hears a Hooten. I don't know. It's Doctor Strange was arguably the best of them. Captain America, you never saw Captain America?
Yes, on the bike.
With Reb
Sam
Brown.
Jones?
Reb Brown.
Who's Sam Jones?
Sam Jones was, Sam Jones was Flash Gordon. But he was also the Spirit. You ever see the one episode Spirit movie?
No.
This is from like 1985, 1986. It's Sam Jones as the Spirit. It was made for TV. It was 90 minutes. It aired one Friday night. in the middle of San Diego Convention Con. I remember that because nobody saw it because of that, and it vanished forever. You can find it on online.
No kidding.
It is world-class awful.
The ones I remember more are the DC ones, the roast, the superhero roast.
That's right, yeah.
The unfunniest roast.
All the great superheroes of the world, and they have nothing better to do than sit around and roast. I know. And then there was the one, there was the two-parter, because it was a two-part thing, because it was the other one was the where they're in action, right?
Right.
Where
well, that's a liberal use of the term action.
Legends of the Superheroes. It was, and it was amazing casting. It was Charlie Callis as
You can't see how excited Mark Wade is. He is so happy that I turned the conversation into the superhero roast.
Charlie Callis is Dr. Savannah, and Jeff Altman is the Weather Wizard. I remember they were all cast because they looked right. No, Charlie Callis was Sinestro. Charlie Callis was Sinestro, and it was what's his name? Ernest T. who played on you can see the gestures here either throwing bricks on the Andy Griffith Show.
I don't know. No, I know the Andy Griffith Show. I don't know what you're talking about.
Talking
Make up a name. Nobody
different the,
language. These people listening to this
Howard,
have no idea.
Howard K. Smith. I don't know. So anyway, I'm sure Mark Evanier will write in and tell me I was wrong. That show, I was the right age then, because I was like 13 and I was just hanging on I thought it was great television.
That show worked. There's a bit in there where Flash shows off his powers.
Yeah.
And they do the thing where like he disappears for a second.
Yeah.
It's just a camera trick.
I know.
Totally worked for me.
I know. And the best part of that thing, the whole best part, if you remember the last climactic scene was Batman and Robin on jet skis. Do you remember this part?
No.
Do you remember who they're chasing?
Joker.
Mordrew the Merciless.
Of course.
In his
big, on jet skis.
In his big fez.
On a boat.
On jet skis. He's also on a jet ski. Apparently they just invented jet skis. They were cutting edge technology at that point.
For the record, I was not 13 years old when these shows were.
That's true.
I was much younger.
Marsha Warfield also had a bit part in this, as she was like one of the witnesses who sees Solomon Grundy.
You are more alive than I've ever heard you on any of these podcasts right now.
I love this piece of television. This is not. It is not. I know we're gonna take another left turn here because you and I have talked about this before, but I can't remember if I've made you sit through it about Alexander the Great.
Go ahead.
Have we talked about this?
No, I don't know.
I hope so. It's one of my favorite moments in like alternate history. In 1965, we bring this up because Adam West was also in this legendary superhero show. In 1965, Bill Shatner filmed a pilot, 60-minute pilot called Alexander the Great. You've never talked about that?
I think we have, actually.
1965, pilot, Joseph Cotten was in it. John Cassavetes was in it.
Wow.
It was like a big deal. He was Alexander the Great, his sidekick in the pilot, Adam West. And in some alternate universe, well, first of all, let me just back up and say that it was 60 unwatchable moments of television. God bless them. It's a miracle, and Brian Augustin's joke was, it's a miracle there was any scenery left with those two guys chewing on it.
But this was a show set during the time?
Oh, yes. It was set in, you know, ancient Macedonia, and William Shatner is Alexander the Great, and Adam West is his sidekick, somebody the very good. I don't know.
Tonight's special guest, Barbara Stanwyck.
I know. A Quentin Martin production. And it was doing more jokes for people who won't get them. Excellent. If you're 60, send us a self-addressed
envelope. Keep the letters coming, Evan.
Yeah, I know. You put in your 3-cent stamp on it and let me know. However, even though this pilot, like I'm saying, in some alternate universe, this pilot sold. And as such, the entire course of popular culture was changed forever because we would have had no Star Trek and no Batman.
Wow.
And there would have been Alexander the Great would have like lasted 2 seasons and died. And I don't even think we'd be...
Or something more spectacular would have happened.
No, we wouldn't be in this room anyway. Like, if not for that, comics would not be around today because the Batman television show hadn't taken off. And Lyle Wagner had been starring on it instead.
Right.
And it lasted 1 season and died. You know,
I don't think you show enough reverence for Lyle Wagner. That show could have lasted for 6 seasons.
That's
comics
true.
Comics could have been huge.
That's true.
Bigger than they were. Big. And could have gone through the DC implosion unscathed. We'd be having the Alexander the Great movie opening this year, a complete reimagination.
That's true. And meanwhile, you know, we'd be stopped by the newsstand on the way down buying our comic books.
Right.
Which are still 12 cents, by the way. Eating our licorice sticks. You were dreaming.
And so from there, I got a job at Marvel.
What? Okay.
I'm helping you splice this together.
So you were so you got to work at DC for a while, but before that, you actually tell me about Kabam a little bit.
I had a show in New York that played for about 2 or 3 years called Kabam that I had written. It was part. It was half written. Half of it was a history of comic books from the perspective of a fictional company that kind of embodied the history of both Marvel and DC. And then through that whole history, the audience would make up superheroes. So the second act was a completely improvised musical comic book kind of thing. So that played for a couple years, and two editors at DC, Dan Raspler and Kevin Dooley, kept coming to the show. Over the course of time, I just got a call out of the blue one day from Dan asking if I wanted to interview for a job, an assistant job up at DC. And I went in for the interview, and I was the oldest assistant editor ever. I got the job, and I worked at DC for 6 years. And then I came over to Marvel about 3 years ago.
And because you handled what at DC? You handled Justice League stuff. I know the answers to this, but...
I worked with Dan on the Justice League stuff, right. And then I moved over to assisting Pete Tomasi on Green Lantern and JSA and Hawkman. And then eventually I got promoted, and I got Legion of Superheroes that we did, and I got I got 52,
right.
Which was the weekly book at DC.
Or in your case, 36.
Yeah, I got 36. Which I like, because we ended on a cliffhanger. I thought it was funny.
And you're like, see you, suckers. I'm going to Marvel.
And, I talked to Marvel and came over here. But the book was in decent shape at that point.
Yeah.
Mike Siglain, rode that horse.
No, I think, exactly. I mean, it's a very – you carved out, not to wax your car, as you would put it. But, I mean, you really sort of carved out the way of doing this weekly comic that nobody had done in mainstream comics for a long time. Certainly not in this form. And so the engine that you created was really impressive, and the fact that you had created it at all. So obviously then you were natural to come over. Did they know Spider-Man was going to be three times a week?
I didn't know that.
Okay. So
I didn't know that until my first day.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah, they dropped that bomb on me my first day.
Because that had to be one of the reasons they pulled you over.
Because you knew how that... Yeah, that had been in the works for a while. I guess that idea had been floated around more than once.
Yeah.
The Superman books at one time were essentially a weekly book,
right.
too, run very differently. But
yeah.
I'm sure around that time, they looked at all those Spider-Man books and said, hey, could we just do this as one ongoing story? And,
right.
The thought was always that Amazing's the one that sells more, so just use that name.
Yeah.
But that was dropped on me the first day. And what I had learned and what I've tried to do with Spider-Man, the 52 stuff, the luckiest I got was having a group of four writers who got along together.
Yeah.
Because that's the hardest. You need people in a room that can not be afraid to have dumb ideas with each other. And
right.
The minute there's any sort of friction, I think if the editor has to play peacemaker, you got a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So that made as much as it's a nice thing for you to say that I created something, it was really me being in the right place with a bunch of guys who got along. And that's mostly what I brought over into this, is trying to have a team of writers, since it starts there anyway,
right.
who are working together
and without egos at the table, which is really impressive. Because again, having done this for such a long time, I've been in every conceivable kind of meeting, and I've been, there was a point at which I was at ground zero of pretty much every single giant comics event for a long time in the room at one point or another. Not necessarily as a writer, but just as an editor sometime. And it's interesting to see how this is a group of people that you pull together who don't have any sort of clashing egos, as near as I can tell, unless I'm the one and you're looking at me like... But no, I mean, I think
I thought it was better to break this to you publicly.
And on that note, we're going to have to break this up into a two-parter because Steve and I gassed on for another 15 minutes. But next week, we're going to talk more about the actual process of how a weekly book is put together, the way Steve does it, the way the writers contribute to the process, the way the artists and the letterers and production manage to make that giant behemoth of a weekly or mostly weekly comic work. And we'll see you next week.